Welcome to the MHW Mark Podcast, where we take deep dives into various aspects of the alcohol industry. My name is Jimmy Moreland. MHW is a U.S. and EU beverage alcohol importer, distributor, and service provider. I'm joined, as usual, by Cassidy Poe from MHW. Welcome back, Cassidy. Good to see you.
Hey, Jimmy. Happy to be back, as always.
We're going to have an awesome conversation with three experts in the PR marketing editorial space. How would you describe, this world that we're going to be entering today?
I think editorial is a good way to describe it. We do have one founder of a PR agency, Laura Badish, who's been on before. And then we have two other guests that I would say are more from the editorial side that we are excited to be welcoming for the first time.
And so this is sort of the intersection of, I guess, what we would call press, right?
Yes.
It's industry specific. So this isn't the New York Times. This is, you know, beverage industry specific press. So if you have a brand that's making news, like, this is how that happens. And this is sort of the intersection of PR being like what you want to get out about your brand, and news, which is like, okay, that's nice, but is it newsworthy? And how can you juice the game a little bit and make all that work in your favor, right?
Exactly.
We are seeing how the PR and news sausage is made on this episode. We want to talk about the next episode that's going to follow up from this. And there's a timely aspect to this because there's something that people have a limited window to sign up for and hear live if they don't want to have to wait for the podcast episode to come out about it. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So this episode will be released on Tuesday, the 23rd, I believe. So if you're listening on Tuesday, you have just 2 days to register for a really awesome webinar that we're hosting on Thursday with another brilliant co-host that we often have on the podcast, Ian Perez and Alexa Greco. They are our brand execution team, and they're doing a webinar on how to create and launch a beverage alcohol brand. So we're very excited about it. If you are interested in hearing about all the supply chain and brand execution aspects of creating a brand or even leveling up a current brand, you should definitely tune in. It's going to be Thursday, April 25th at 11 a.m. Eastern.
And it's more than just a presentation that you just sit there and watch. If you want, if that was it, then it would just be a podcast. But you have the opportunity to do Q&A, is that right?
Correct. Yes. They will be open to questions for the last 15 minutes. So you have a chance to have two experts. You can ask anything you want live. I highly recommend that you check it out.
And if you ask a really good question, you might end up on the podcast.
There you go.
Well, look forward to, so we're going to put links to register for that webinar in the show notes here. So if you're listening to this podcast on Tuesday the 23rd or Wednesday the 24th or really early on Thursday the 25th, then scroll down, hit that link, register so that you can check out that webinar at 11 a.m. Eastern on Thursday the 25th. If you miss all of that, then the podcast version of that webinar will be available on May the 7th would be when that would come out, because we release every other Tuesday. Check out the links in the notes. But for right now, we're going to get right into this discussion with these three experts in marketing and editorial. And like I said, the intersection of all that. First, she's the editorial director for Professor Media Group, which includes Alcohol Professor, Cheese Professor, Chocolate Professor, and Olive Oil Professor websites. Welcome to the show, Amy Sherman.
Thank you.
And next up, she's the spirits editor for BevNet, reporting for both BevNet.com and Brewbound.com. Welcome, Farron Salniker.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
And finally, we're thrilled to welcome back public relations guru and founder of the Badish Group, Laura Badish. So good to see you again, Laura.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Now, we had Laura on the podcast way back in episode 8. I highly recommend giving that one a listen if you missed it. But since we've already heard Laura's background in that episode, Amy and Farron, can you share a little bit about what you do in your current roles and some of your background? And Amy, if you'd like to go first.
Sure. So my primary focus is publishing new stories each week on Alcohol Professor and then the sister sites, Cheese Professor, Chocolate Professor, and Olive Oil Professor.
That sounds like a dream. All of those things are just the most amazing thing. I'm jealous. Sorry, Farron, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm spirits editor at BevNet, which means I cover the business of spirits. So trends, investments, strategy, legislative changes, anything happening in the spirits world from a trade angle. And then before that, I've been writing about food, beverage, and style for like 10 years and also curating and producing events in the same fields, particularly agave spirit events.
So we're going to dive a little deeper into what exactly your readers are looking for when they hop onto your sites. Can you both tell me a little bit about what kind of information they're looking for from each of your respective publications?
Sure. We describe our audience as enthusiasts. So they're a mix of consumers and industry folks. They look to us for both trend information and news, as well as features on specific brands and categories. We like to think that expertise is really what sets us apart. We're not doing the most basic stories. We're trying to dig a little bit deeper.
And for BevNet and Brewbound, a lot of our audience is made up of entrepreneurs themselves, people in the industry, and then, you know, their distributors, other suppliers. It's really people who are deep in the industry, not necessarily consumers. And so they want to know what's going on in their industry, whether it's data, new products, or kind of larger, widespread changes. And you know, for a lot of our readers, they want to hear about how other businesses are succeeding, how they're solving problems. And so we try and get into that with like case studies, how someone raised money, how they got their sales velocity up, how they found the right business partner, things like that. So really in the more nitty gritty of business.
On this podcast, we're always talking about, you know, the story. A brand can't just be like, hey, the liquid's good. The brand should be able to survive on that. Like, you need a story. You need authenticity. You need all that stuff. So what do you look for in a brand story? What draws your attention? What makes you want to write about a brand?
For me, it's something new, something different, but still relevant to our audiences, a story that is yet to be told. We will feature seasonal stories, but I'd really rather feature a great story about an up-and-coming, under-the-radar brand or producer than another five cocktails for Memorial Day.
Yeah, we don't tend to do too many holiday specific or trend stories either. So for us, you know, if it's a new or independent brand, for me, what's really interesting is how they solved a problem in a unique way. So that could be a new product, like they solved a problem for a consumer in an interesting way, maybe how they found the exact right customer base for them, how they created a brand that resonates, how they brought in, say, knowledge from other fields. Maybe they're just making an RTD, which is a ready-to-drink cocktail for a good price in a way that hasn't been done before. But yeah, it's really about kind of how the lens that I view things through is how did this brand solve a problem? And for me, that brand story also needs to be kind of transparent. And so if it doesn't seem authentic from the start, I'm less interested in covering it.
If I'm a brand and I'm just sort of getting started, you know, maybe I've got some of my operational ducks in a row, but I'm just starting to get started with PR and marketing. How do I approach this part of that whole puzzle? How do I approach editorial? Like, what's the first step?
Well, I'm curious about what works for everyone else. But for me, I actually like when brands introduce themselves or founders introduce themselves and they do it without an ask. I think that's an important thing about business in general is I think you should introduce yourself to people, reach out to people when you're not only when you're looking to get something from them, right? And so I actually really appreciate it when a founder writes or a PR person writes and they say, you know, give me maybe two lines about their product, what makes it different, and put more information at the bottom, and maybe they demonstrate how they could be useful to BevNet beyond stories just about their brand. So they could say, you know, if you're looking for a source about additive-free tequila or being a woman-owned brand that successfully completed their first raise, like, in a way, they're kind of helping me do my job by saying, here's how my product fits into your coverage beyond just you doing a feature on me. And so I think that's a great way to start. And then showing that you've read the publication too. So for example, if you have a new ready-to-drink cocktail, if you pitch, like, I'd love this to be included in your next RTD cocktail gallery, that makes my job really easy and shows that you've taken a look at the site and understand how we cover things.
Can I ask how those messages come across? Is it email? Is it through a contact form on your website? Is it a LinkedIn message? How does that usually work for you?
Yeah, our email is on the site, so people can email. We also have ways you can submit releases on the website, and we check those quite often. So if someone submits through there, I find it. And sometimes it's a little easier for me to find those because my inbox gets bombarded. But yeah, just an email is great. A LinkedIn message is fine too, but just a quick email is effective, I think.
I'd also say take a look at our sites to understand what's a fit. I get a lot of pitches that are really not appropriate for us. And if someone had just taken a look at the site, they would figure that out pretty quickly. Then I would say assume I know nothing about your brand. Tell me in a direct way what I need to know and entice me with something uniquely compelling. Provide me with access to people to interview, images, background material. Really understand what's compelling. Don't pitch me a feature such as a woman founder. What makes her interesting, unique, worthy of coverage? And I have to add a pet peeve, which is I find sometimes people who are new to PR think that the way to impress me is by showing me coverage from other publications. That's a really bad idea. Don't show me all the other publications that have already covered your client or your brand.
Laura, what's the first step for a brand in this area?
To figure out its strong suits, basically, what makes it different. Same thing that Amy and Farron said, just from a PR side, digging into their story. Are they using the only agave, an agave that no one else uses? Are they maturing whiskey in port casks and no one else is doing it? Who's doing the blending? How long it's taking? I heard a story last night that was remarkable. I wasn't on the brand at the time, but it was when Ardbeg was creating their alligator expression, which was very, very charred. It had a very charred taste. And it was every day during the time that it was maturing, Dr. Bill, who's the master distiller, had the entire distillery team rolling those barrels so that the charcoal would not settle in the barrel. Like, imagine if I had that opportunity to tell that story. And especially now with social media, that would be such a unique storyline. And those are the kinds of things that I look for.
When a brand approaches you wanting to pitch themselves, what do you think are the most important things that they need to include in this pitch? You kind of touched on a few things in your preferences and pet peeves, but if there's anything more specific, we would love to hear that too.
Yeah, background information. Again, don't assume I'm familiar with your brand. Current topics and issues, what are you focused on right now and why? What makes it a good story? If you can't answer that question, don't expect me to figure it out. Resources. If I don't have access to people to interview and images, I may not have time to go digging that information up myself. Make it really easy for me.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. All of that is exactly what I would need. But yeah, really understanding how your story is unique and how that story fits into the publication that I am working for. So that just having that angle, I mean, I will figure out the angle because I am the editor, but you can make it very easy for me. Then, yeah, having beautiful photos helps. Like Amy said, access to interviews is great. And also make sure that you are ready for those interviews or the team is ready for their interviews. Sometimes I get pitched and then I'm like, this is great. Like, let's schedule something. And then they're like, oh, the founder's traveling, or or actually, could they just do email via email? And I'm like, why did you pitch me? So I think just being ready then to like hop into that story quick, especially because news moves fast. That doesn't mean your story will always get picked up within a week, but sometimes it can. And so you should be ready for that.
I think Cassidy can speak to the difficulty of getting people to appear for an interview as the booker for this podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
For brands who have never done editorial before, and maybe they are about to start to take these steps that you've laid out, once you express interest in including the brand in the story, if their pitch is good and you're like, yes, we're going to do this, how much time and I guess how much of a lift is there involved for all parties as far as effort and as far as time? And when from yes, let's go to like publication, like what does all that sort of timeline stuff look like?
For us, it's pretty straightforward. I might ask a few questions via email if like enough background hasn't been provided, or if I'm, you know, trying to say fit their story into a larger story, I might have some more contextual questions before we hop in an interview. But then typically I plan to interview folks. I try not to take more than 30 minutes of a brand founder's time. I just think entrepreneurs are very busy. And so interviews are typically around 30 minutes. And I try to make my calendar easy to book, so there's not a lot of back and forth there. And then after that, I might have some clarifying questions, and that's kind of it. And then it's our jobs to write the story, which may take us, you know, short or long time. And then publication can be anywhere from like the next day to months later, depending on where the story fits, what other news comes in. And so sometimes I know that process can be a little frustrating for brands, as they might be eager to see their story out. But if there's not a super timely hook to that story, we often have to like prioritize other news.
And it's nice to have some evergreen stuff in the bag if you need it, right?
Exactly.
The timing really depends on the story. I mean, there are some stories that are evergreen where I may not run them right away. My SEO consultant tells me, if it's a timely story, look at a month prior to whatever. For example, if it's a book review, think a month before publication to get that out. If it's a holiday, think as much as 2 months to get something out there, so it has time to really build as people are searching. So it just depends. It really depends on the story. But to echo what Farron said, if you're pitching me, make sure that you're ready to go, because it's a waste of my time. If you've pitched me and then I'm waiting for you to get back to me, and it just, you may not get included in the story, to be honest with you. If you pitch me a great idea and I start to run with it and then you're not ready, you know, I'm not going to wait forever. Something else that's good to know is that I require of my writers in the guidelines that if they're not a subject matter expert, they need to quote one or two subject matter experts in the story. So we are always looking for experts, and an expert is not a marketing director. It's someone who is an actual expert. So if you can offer me experts, I'm going to pass this along to my writers and let them know, here's a source for your story, and make it a little bit easier for them. So that's just another thing that's really helpful for me and may, again, get you into a story.
So I just want to add that we just had a story go live in the April issue of Food and Wine magazine, and it took a year to get that story placed. We set up the trip for the writer. The story had been approved about a month after she got back. It was a spirits client, so the natural place for it was the April drinks issue. And because the story was in print, it took a full year's cycle practically to get that story done. But it was well worth it. Print, to me, still, I hold in such high esteem.
Me too.
That's so fun, yeah.
we take a look at their assets and then recommend additional assets if we need. So I always say to a client, you can pay a fee, but if you don't have the assets to support the fee and my work, then you shouldn't be paying a fee because I can't work magic with nothing. So for me, assets could, if I'm pitching a female mezcalera, for example, I need photos of that person. I could get stock photos of an agave field from anywhere, but I can't get the photos of the person. So you need to do a shoot. You need to be prepared to have an endless string of samples for me to send out to media and influencers. Because without tasting the product, for some people, depending, a trade story not generally, but a consumer story definitely, how do you expect them to write a story on the taste or the look or the feel or the bottle unless they really have something physically to hold? So, you know, it could be video, depending on if, you know, we're sending the video out. Does it necessarily have to be a big bang dinner release? No, it doesn't, because so many people cancel the day before. You know, I'm all about using
money wisely, but
making sure that we have the right assets to go out with.
Do you have a specific list of things that you ask
because,
them
again,
to
if I pitch Farron and she asked
like,
for
needs to be
a photo,
in the toolkit
I don't have it. I just
client.
Lost a photo opportunity within the story.
I would also love to add that Laura is a pro. Just seriously, Laura is one of those people who works in the biz who I think does it really right. You always send me like your updated client list. You are clearly reading what's out there. So sometimes I just get little notes of like, oh, great job on this article or whatever that has nothing to do with her clients necessarily. And then, you know, sends me updates that are really like well thought out and like, but the summary is often short and sweet and gets me what I need in two sentences. So just wanted to offer that praise.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just to add on to what Farron said, it's all about relationship. And that's, I think, where Laura is the strongest, is building relationships. Because if you have a relationship with me, I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to pay attention. I wake up, there's 150 email messages that I have to go through first thing in the morning. I'm just doing triage. I'm just getting rid of stuff and highlighting things that are important. If I get an email from Laura, we already have a relationship. I know that she knows me. She's not going to send me stuff that's not appropriate. That cuts through really, really well. So work with somebody who has great relationships already.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a founder, like I said, like to start that relationship, I think some people might be trying to figure out how to do that. I really think it is that introduction when you don't need anything. And I often do 10-minute chats with founders or people who are like working in PR and have a new client. And it's just a very quick intro chat. What's going on with you? You get to know each other. And then there's like face behind the email, because like Amy said, you know, when you get 150 emails in the morning, if you have talked to that person before, you're more inclined to go to those emails first. So yeah, that's just my tip, is that even though editors are a bit busy, it often saves me time in the long run if I have that quick intro chat in the beginning of like forming a relationship.
Endorsements all around for Laura. Love it.
With BevNet, we don't have one really for online. Our print magazine there's info on our website about that editorial calendar. But otherwise, yeah, we don't, you know, we're covering the news. And so our online home is really kind of day to day. And of course, we're always planning stories, but we don't really have an editorial calendar that is the same as our print magazine.
We don't publish one either, but anyone can reach out to me directly. I'm really more concerned about, is it a good story? If it's a good story, we're going to run it. If it's not, we're not. You know, it's not based on as much on calendar. I mean, we do have priorities that come and go throughout the year, but that's really subject to change.
Yeah, this whole episode, we've just been talking about what makes something, how do you be a good story? And that's, I mean, that's what this podcast is all about. We've been talking about that for 18 episodes now. I'm curious to know if each of you has maybe one example of a brand that's done a really, really good job of developing their brand story and getting it out there and making themselves worth covering, making themselves a good story.
I can think of two off the top of my head. One is Big Nose Kate, which is a whiskey brand that's made in New Mexico. So right there, that's a little bit different.
It's also named after a female quicker than
heroine that wasn't really talked about too much. She was kind of portrayed in media as a sidekick versus as the main character. And it is female owned and distilled.
Editorial
comes from a woman who has been a distiller in the craft biz for a very long time. And they do have celebrity partners, but it is not a celebrity brand. And so as a trade magazine, that part was interesting to me, and that they're not relying on the celebrity to be their story. And also all the other aspects of the brand were quite interesting. And so I think they've done a good job kind of pitching themselves, really focusing on the liquid, who's making it, and the story that they've created around their, you know, the character of their brand. And to be honest, when they first pitched me, I was actually in a very busy period. They were doing an event in LA and I couldn't make it. And so, you know, I didn't actually write about them for a very long time. They kind of wrote me again and said that the woman behind the brand was now becoming the CEO. And that was a good hook for me to be able to create like a news piece around them. And so that's just an example of how, like, sometimes brand stories can be wonderful, but they don't quite resonate for what I need in terms of creating a news story. But later on, they found a good home. And I think they've gotten other good press as well, just being really authentic about who they are and why they can create this story around a female brand that's authentic and not pandering to gender in a way that's different from some of, say, larger companies or larger whiskey companies or big strategics. So that, I think, is they've done a great job. And the other one I'll just mention quickly is Gaywater, which is a ready-to-drink vodka soda, basically. You know, the contents inside the can are not dramatically different from a lot of the other ready-to-drink cocktails, but their branding and their story, again, is quite different, clearly speaking to a consumer. There's a lot of authenticity there. And I think they're, you know, just trying to slowly actually get the word out. They haven't been moving too fast. They've launched in like New Jersey and New York and now moving into California. They're also kind of slowly telling their story, slowly getting their product out, but very clearly have a unique angle.
We had Spencer Hodison on the podcast a few episodes back.
Oh, amazing.
It was a very fun conversation. It's a very, very cool brand idea. And the execution, like you say, is top notch.
Yeah.
A couple of brands come to mind for me. I think Kalinga Bacanora has done a great job. It's a unique and high quality product, and it has a great backstory about family and history. And yet it's part of this category of agave spirits that's on fire right now. So it's like a unique story within a bigger story. Another one that comes to mind is Sorrel Liqueur. It's not just that it's a Caribbean liqueur brand owned by one of the only Black distillers in the U.S., but it's a reflection of his personal ancestry and culture and a story of perseverance in terms of how he's managed to succeed and the challenges that he's gone through with the brand. So both of those stories, I think, are really compelling.
So I think in the spirits category, the one brand that really led way back in the day before cause marketing was a real thing was Absolut Vodka, and how they embraced the gay community, supported the community, sponsored the bike rides and the white parties, and contributed to any cause that was relevant within that market. And that's how they built a very loyal following. We had a conversation about this the other day, and I don't see them doing as much in that definite direction. They're a little bit all over in their community efforts. They still support the gay community, but not in the way that they did when they first embraced that project.
Laura, you mentioned having a story about the eclipse. Is there a question that I can ask you that can lead you into that story?
I would say, why, you know, who marketed the eclipse and why was it so amazing? Because everyone from like 6-year-olds to 80-year-olds kind of just took the day, embraced science, brought a renewed interest to science. I am not a science nerd, but I had no idea that thousands of eclipses take place throughout the year and over the water. And because the Earth is 70% water, we never even see those eclipses. So it even like spurred my little science mind a drop. I won't say enough, but a drop.
Big Moon was behind that marketing push.
Exactly.
We'll roll into our final question, our fun question. And we're going to start with Laura because we've already asked you this question. I didn't have a moment to go back to the episode and recall your answer. But if the answer has changed, what is your favorite cocktail, Laura?
I may have said an old fashioned, but I would have to say Manhattan is right up there with the old fashioned. I'm a dark spirits person, so that appeals to me.
Any particular spin, any way that you personalize your Manhattan, or you just like the classic?
I love the classic, but last night I had a toffee cocktail, sort of like a Manhattan with Ardbeg, with some caramel corn on the side. It was really delicious.
That sounds amazing. We'll move. Farron, let's go to you here. What is your favorite cocktail? This doesn't have to be a desert island forever. It could be just for this week.
Okay, great. I'm quite a mezcal neat girl, frankly. But if I am to order a cocktail, I do love mezcal cocktails. So Oaxacan Old Fashioned might be one. And then also a white mezcal Negroni is one of my go-tos if I think it's made well or if I see it on the menu.
It's fascinating. Mezcal is terrifying to me. Anytime I've had it, it's been...
What? Okay, we need to do a tasting because if it's terrifying, then maybe you're drinking the wrong mezcals.
Or I'm drinking it wrongly. That's probably more correct.
Exactly.
It's definitely something to savor, not shoot. So if you're shooting it, that's definitely...
Are you drinking the mezcal with the worm at the bottom?
Yeah.
You know, living most of my life in Texas, we did things a little different down
okay,
there.
Okay, so. That explains it.
Amy, same question.
So it really depends on the day. I love a good highball. But today I'm going to say a well-made French 75. That's kind of my go-to cocktail because I'm not going to make it at home probably. So I love to have it out at a bar. And I just read that there's a new book just on the French 75. So I'm really looking forward to reading that book because I know a little bit of the history of it. But apparently they wrote an entire book on the French 75.
Wow.
That's amazing. And you just go with gin. Do you do anything special with it?
No. I mean, it just needs to be a balanced cocktail. It needs to be well made. You know, it needs to have fresh fizz in it. Yeah, just really well made. There are a couple of variations actually on the French 75. I do like gin drinks in general, but I'm pretty flexible as long as it's well made.
All right. Thank you, listeners, for joining us on the MHW Mark podcast. And thanks again to Cassidy Poe, Amy Sherman, Farron Salniker, and Laura Badish for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Bye. Thanks for having us.
For listeners who want to find out more about our guests' goings-on, you can check out links in the show notes. This podcast is produced by me, Jimmy Moreland, with booking and planning support by Cassidy Poe. It's presented by MHW. Find out more at mhwltd.com or connect with MHW on LinkedIn. Lend us a hand by subscribing, rating, and reviewing this podcast wherever you listen. We'll be back in your feed in 2 weeks. We'll see you then. Cheers.